My name is Sam Clements, and welcome to this mini edition of the Picture House podcast. Today, I am very lucky to be joined by director Wash Westmoreland, the director of a new film called Colette, which is in cinemas right now. Also the director of Still Alice from 2014. It was a huge film that year, did very well at the Oscars and BAFTAs. Hopefully you remember that one with Julianne Moore. His new film is also has a very strong female performance at the centre of it in Keira Knightley's portrayal as the titular Colette. Keira Knightley is so good in this film. We had a really good chat about Keira and how she approached the role. Also, Dominic West, who plays her on-screen partner, Willie, he's very, very watchable in this film, and they are so good together. I had a blast watching this movie. But yeah, so Colette's in cinemas now. We've got Wash on the pod talking about the movie. Highly recommend you seek it out. I think you will enjoy. We'll be back with another podcast very soon. So Wash, thank you so much for talking to us today on the Picture House podcast.
Well, thank you for your interest.
We're currently at the London Film Festival. You're currently in the middle of all of the festival release that you do with a film like this. How are you feeling?
Feeling great, actually. It's been a bit of a whirlwind. We played Toronto Film Festival about a month ago.
Oh, wow.
And since then, there's been a lot of press and Q&As and little premieres here and there. And then the big one in London last night. So yeah, it's all been a lot of energy.
Amazing. How do you, can you remember how you felt before the Toronto premiere?
Really good, because we got our cast back together and it was like seeing everyone together again, and just this sort of anticipation of seeing it in the big screen. But I've played Toronto Film Festival before and I feel it's a very friendly audience there, so I was really looking forward to it.
I say you had the big one in London now, so it's just that small matter of the main release, I guess, coming up.
Yeah, fingers crossed. The signs are good. The responses I'm seeing, the people online, are very positive, so that's always a good thing.
What's nice, I guess, at a festival is there's a chance to talk to the audience. There's often Q&As and red carpet interviews.
And you know, you just feel it. I've done films that hit and films that haven't hit. Mm. And when you're in the audience, you feel a certain vibration. You know when an audience is connecting to the story, and it's one of the best feelings as a filmmaker that you can have.
Are the questions you're being asked what you anticipated, or are there certain elements now sort of showing their faces which maybe you weren't, you know, you didn't think about when you're in the edit? Maybe
that's an interesting question, for instance, I haven't been asked before. Yeah, so but there's a certain standard ones that you get asked, and you have to be careful not to just fall into a sort of pat answer, because you want to always keep them fresh and engaged in the conversation. But yeah, then there's always like people will sometimes throw you a banana skin and you got to like figure out that one. And sometimes people ask very random, like, what was your favorite book when you were 8 years old? I'm like, right, okay, what can I come up with there? You know, sometimes people just sling you weird ones, but usually get a good conversation going. I think there's a lot of issues the film brings up that people are very interested in, so it's great to talk about that.
The film is, you know, it's a period setting, but I think there are certain things in the film which are relevant to today, and it feels quite timely, which is an odd thing to say about a period piece.
And it's tribute to Colette, because she was living 100 years ago, but her way of living and the way she tackled the barriers she faced in her life are very relevant to today, and I think inspiring to look at and say she broke through and she was unstoppable, and that's how you make social change.
To completely change time periods, how did you prepare for this film before shooting, and what sort of research do you undergo with a period piece based around a real life person?
Well, I mean, with Colette, there's so much rich material to dig into in Colette's own writing, so much of which derives directly from her own lived experience. So when you read Colette, you come into contact with this formidable personality. So that's the starting point, really. Then my co-writer, co-director and late husband Richard and I visited France and went to all of, you know, the houses that Colette lived and many of the haunts of the Belle Epoque, many of which had totally changed now. Like, you know, L'Assommoir from the novel by Zola is now a post office, and Le Chat Noir, that was the bohemian underground hangout, is now like a gift shop. But occasionally you just catch a glimpse through a doorway or something, some smell that drifted down the street or something, you'd feel that, oh, this was the city of Colette and Willie. These are the paving stones that they walked on. And we also visited the Saint-Sauveur, which was Colette's childhood home, and that's now a museum with a lot of sort of, you know, her correspondence and letters and personal artifacts in. And we also visited her country house that at the time in 2001 was completely abandoned. And we visited a town of Besançon. No one knew where it was. We actually went to the mayor's office, said, no, it doesn't exist, sorry. And so Richard said, I bet if we went to an old bookshop, someone would know. And we literally went into this, like, really like old dusty old bookshop, and sure enough the woman who was working there was like, oh yeah, I know La Maison de Colette, and she draws a little map, and we went up there and it was we had to climb over a fence. Oh. The whole edifice had completely crumbled and it was there in ruins, but it was exactly like the old photos in its, you know, in its bones, and there was a single red rose in the garden. So we felt like, oh, Colette wants us to make this movie.
That's amazing. I was just going on that sort of treasure hunt before getting stuck in, sounds like a really fantastic experience.
Yeah, it really filled us up. And when we actually wrote the first draft of the screenplay, it happened in 10 days because we were so full of the ideas and the story. And we thought, oh, this is great. We see the movie. We see it right in front of us. We know exactly what it should be. And that was 17 years ago.
Oh, amazing.
So what we thought was going to be like almost like a quick trajectory because we were so confident in the material was actually a very long process. Mm. I think mainly because in some ways the world had to catch up with Colette. Mm. When we first pitched this story back in Los Angeles, the sort of widespread feeling was, yes, it's very interesting material, but it's a niche story. You know, this woman's struggle, are people really interested in France 100 years ago? Does it really have any relevance? And Colette's exploration of her sexuality, people were a little frightened of, I think, a few years ago for a period piece drama.
Oh, wow, it does. That's quite an amazing journey. I love that you did that first draft in 10 days.
Yeah, it's sometimes best. We were staying in a place in the French countryside that had no internet. Tick.
That's a dream.
No TV. Not even a decent phone signal. I mean, there was nothing to do. I mean, it was a very old house that had a bell tower with bats in it. It would have probably been easier to write a horror movie there. It was completely isolated, completely silent, and very much like the joy of rural France, which fed Colette's writing, and I think it fed us. And just the ability to concentrate without all the distractions of technology was really welcome.
That's amazing. I think as someone who's watched the film, it what was nice is she felt real and she felt lived in, and the other characters felt very authentic. And there's so many elements that go into making that, but some of it has to come from what's on the page and that detail that you get from a trip like this.
Oh, very much. I think it's such a rich time period, and you know, there's so many wonderful accounts of it, not just from Colette, but from Zola and from Proust, and you know, these great writers, this great music that was written at that time by Ravel and Debussy and Sarti, and you can sort of nourish yourself with all this. There's amazing paintings. I mean, it was one of the golden ages of, you know, art creation. Was Paris at the Belle Epoque. Mm. And, you know, we used a lot of references from great painters like Gustave Caillebotte and Jean Borot and Georges Seurat. I mean, it's just that we wanted to convey all that richness. So the script becomes a focusing point that it all goes into, and then it all comes out again when you start working with your heads of department, production designers, costume designers, and cinematographers, and they bring their interpretations to, you know, the world that you have created.
Is there almost a case of having too much material to whittle down into that?
Well, it took 17 years. So, yeah, it took us a while. I think in the earlier drafts of the script, yeah, there was almost like too much information. Like, Colette moved house 4 times during that period. Mm. But if you're going to keep moving house, you know, is that really what the story's about? No. So we used the same apartment, but the idea was the apartment evolved as they evolved as a couple. And you saw as their, you know, fortunes rose, you saw nicer appointment, nicer furniture and nice, you know, decorations appear, and then, you know, things start to fall apart again. You sort of see the character of the apartment rather than doing 4 different apartments, which is not practical for production, but was more historically accurate.
That's a different film, isn't it? Colette moving houses.
Yeah, exactly. That's the mini series or maxi series. There's enough in Colette's life for like 10 seasons on HBO, literally. She really lived. So maybe they can do the moving the boxes around.
I can't wait for that. You've got an incredible cast in this film. At what point did you have that finished screenplay to start, you know, showing to cast? And when did you get your key members on board?
Well, literally in 2001, we had the screenplay ready. And though Kira was not the first person we thought of, because at the time she hadn't even done Bend It Like Beckham.
Oh, wow.
but through time, obviously, you know, we made three other films while we were waiting to make Colette. And sometimes we'd see a movie and we'd go, oh, that actress, maybe she has some Colette energy. And when we saw Pride and Prejudice all those years back, and Kira's like 19 or 20, and she delivers that incredible speech that tears Mr. Darcy apart when they're out in the countryside in the rain on that folly, that wonderful moment, that we thought she has the power, the verbal power, the intellectual power, this delivery that is like extremely, extremely strong, and that this could work for Colette, who was also a very unstoppable person with a spine of steel. Mm. That was the first moment we started thinking about Kira. And when the movie was seriously remounted after our last film, which was Still Alice, Kira was the natural go-to person for the lead role.
In the film, you see Colette over a period of time. And what's so good about Kira is she can play younger and older, and like you, and it, but it's so subtle. It's only like you just sort of think about it at the back of your brain, you know, maybe like every 20 or so minutes. She's like, oh, she's a bit older. That's
well, if you think of where she's at the beginning of the film and where she ends up, you've really seen that her grow into her own skin. And we, you know, we were shooting out of order, so we had to have a strategy. We divided Colette into like seven different phases of evolution, which corresponded to hair and makeup, it corresponded to clothes. But for Kira, it was about body language, and it was about her deportment, first as a sort of young teenager, and then later as someone who's learning to stride in her own shoes, and also her energy, like the way she would initially kind of avert her eyes quite a lot, or, you know, give the ground to her husband, but by the end she's staring him directly in the eye, and there's a shift in her voice as well. So you see her growing up, and it's really about this incredible acting performance. And we looked at an old movie called Coal Miner's Daughter by Michael Apted, and focused on Sissy Spacek's performance and the astonishing change she makes for Loretta Lynn from going from age 14 to age 40 without a single date card appearing. You just know the change from the change in her deportment. And we also looked at Letter from an Unknown Woman, where Joan Fontaine does a similar thing, again goes from a teenager to a full-grown woman in this astonishing transformation.
I love that when it doesn't pull you out, you know, the transition of time, you just go with it and you get a sense of it through the decorations being different in the back of the house and the costumes being different.
Well,
you know?
We used a lot of technology as a way of signposting change. Like at the beginning, it's very much horse-drawn carriages, and then you see bicycles being invented, and then at a certain point a motor car appears, and then sometimes in the background of scenes you start hearing more and more cars, like the city soundscape is changing. We have a thing about the electrification at the of Paris. At the beginning, there's, you know, everything is candle lit in the like 1893, but then Paris was actually electrified, not street by street, but building by building, because they would put generators in the basement. So of course the richest people, like the Salon of Madame de Caive, is one of the first places to be electrified. And then later on we see that Colette and Willie's apartment's been electrified, and that's a signal that they've started making money with the Claudine's novels that Colette is writing and Willie is taking credit for. But there's also other things. At first she's dipping her fountain pen. No, she's dipping her nib pen in the ink. By the end it's a fountain pen. It's just like it was an incredible time for changing technologies, and I think it just kind of energized the age.
That's so much detail to look out for now on a repeat viewing.
we spent a lot of time putting stuff in, so there should be a lot in there for the history buffs.
The film is beautiful to look at, and there is a lot going on, and you've got such great detail, especially in like the club scene when there's lots of people, but also lots of great detail. Like, how did you bring those things to life? Did you have references, like real photos, or?
Yeah, there's a photographic record, because there were, you know, people taking photographs at the time. There's, you know, also, as I mentioned before, the paintings of the time and the literary accounts, like the idea of the tortoise with the gold shell that was being Jewel comes from a book by J.K. Huisman called Against Nature, which was a symbolist book that was popular at the time. And then also when they pour milk into the piano as this kind of avant-garde, like, outsider art thing they do at the Salon, that was taken from a Zola novel called Wow. Nana. There's some quotations from Proust in there. It was like sort of taking, you know, it was, the period was very richly recorded, so it was about harvesting that into the visual design of the movie. Also, the camera work was very much inspired by Max Ophuls, the great filmmaker of the 30s, 40s and 50s, who was born in the Belle Epoque and often recreated it in his movies, like Earrings of Madame D'Ur, where he has these long shots where he'll follow his heroine, like Danielle Darrieux, through a salon, rather than doing the big wide shot with the chandeliers and everyone dancing. It's more personal. It's about her view of that world. So we have this rule that Colette moves the camera. So all the mise-en-scène in the movie is based around her experience and her point of view. Even when Willie's kind of doing all the talking and burning up all the oxygen in the room, like in the early scenes, it's still Colette who we're with because the camera is showing it's her story.
That's a really good rule for this film, and it must be really helpful having stuff like that when you go into sort of filmmaking. This is how it has to look.
Yeah, well, I mean, there's so many great references that you can sort of, you know, use as a discussion point with, you know, my cinematographer, Giles Nudgens, or my production designer, Michael Carlin, or my costume designer, Andrea Fleisch, and you get into it together, and it's exciting, because, you know, unless we get to be Doctor Who's assistant, right, we're not going to be able to time travel anytime soon. So movies are going to be the thing that takes you there, and we wanted to make sure for the audience it gives you that experience.
That's amazing. Well, thank you so much for talking to us.
Thank you. It's been great.
We loved the film and can't wait to play it on the big screen in front of all of our customers in January next year.
Well, fantastic. Well, I really appreciate that, and hope the customers enjoy it.
Oh, cheers,
thank
man.
You.
Thank you.
Thank you.